Let's go live to Belfast and to our friend for many is the long year, and indeed we might start off by congratulating you, Máirtín Ón Mhaoibhlór, on a great victory in the Northern Ireland elections. First of all, you're very, very welcome, Máirtín.
Thank you, Adrian, and thanks for that lovely musical introduction of the song Belfast. I'm standing on a sun-kissed Falls Road, and you know, it's not often we have really Mediterranean days in Belfast, but it's a beautiful day here, and I'm standing outside the wonderful Cultural Irish Language Centre, the Culturlan, which many of our American visitors who've come over the years have managed to visit the art gallery and the Irish language activities. But I also can see where I'm standing a wonderful piece of art by the New York Irish American artist Brian O'Doherty, who used the pen name Patrick Ireland in 1972 after Bloody Sunday until 2009, and then he took his own name back. He thought that there'd been enough peace and enough progress in the north to take his name back. But it's great to be with you. I hope things are going well. Every time I hear the news from New York in particular, I see that you're having a really thoughtful but inspirational celebration of 1916 and commemoration of 1916. You're really showing the way yet again.
Absolutely. Now, many would feel that the commemoration, that the celebrations that take place very freely here began actually last October and runs right through the end of the year, that they would be few and far between in Northern Ireland because of tensions, because of the peace process, and particularly since, you know, anything we hear about her from Northern Ireland in the general media, in the broad media here, has to do with negativity, it has to do with the dissident IRA, it has to do with with more of the same, of devastation. We rarely hear of great the great progress that has been made in Northern Ireland. But again, you might fill us in on how the centenary of 1916 has been and continues to be commemorated in Northern Ireland.
Well, yes, I think that in some ways you're right in that the past is a contentious country in this part of the world, whether it's the unionist narrative of history or whether it's the Republican or nationalist narrative. So progress perhaps is more thoughtful, more studied, but it is progress nonetheless. And one of the things that gave me great cheer this year is that Belfast City Council, it's not that long ago that Belfast City Council would have been really a monocultural institution, would have been just one group held all the power. But this year, Belfast City Council allocated monies, a full budget, for a 1916 commemorative and celebratory program. It set down some criteria. It said, look, if you're going to publish pamphlets or you're going to organize events, could we ensure that they are inclusive, that they encourage discussion and debate, that they are not propagandistic? And I think that was a fair enough challenge that people rose to. So this entire year in Belfast, there have been a series of events which have marked 1916 with great pride. And, of course, there are some wonderful Belfast connections with 1916. One of the men killed driving to meet Roger Casement, coming in with one hoped at that time guns for the rising, was Oliver O'Monaghan from Belfast, and we're very proud of that. The Corr sisters from Belfast, very famously, when the men of Belfast were sent home and said the rioting was cancelled, the women folk of Belfast took the midnight train from Dungannon and joined up with James Connolly in Liberty Hall and took part in the rioting. So we've been marking all those things in a way which exhibits great pride, but also in a way which says there should be nothing to fear from this. And just for your information, and people may not know this, but the biggest, I think, formal dinner marking 1916 will take place tonight, organised by the Belfast Commemoration Committee, which is funded by City Hall, when 2,000 people will gather in the new convention centre in Belfast. It's only open 10 days, and 2,000 people will gather tonight to mark the rising. Also, just to finish, we did have a formal dinner in City Hall with perhaps not as much inclusion of the unionist community as we would have wished, and that they decided to stay away. But it was a very serious attempt to try and mark a rising with pride, but to make sure there was space for everyone, and that took place in City Hall. So progress is being made. Is it as fast as I would like it to be? Adrian, no, it's not. But I think a lot of seeds have been sown this year, and we will see many other events inspired by how 1916 has been marked in Belfast down in the north.
You know, there are a number of things that we would be, of course, very interested in. First of all, your own elections in the north. Were there any surprises there? Was there any affirmation of the work that has been done throughout the peace process in particular?
Well, I think there were a number of messages from the doorsteps, and, you know, like all my colleagues in politics, I spent 4 weeks before the election going to doors, putting your proposition before ordinary people, hearing what they have to say. And one thing that came back to me from the doorsteps was that people are pleased that there is a government in place in Stormont which is committed to inclusion, which is a power-sharing government, which is organised on an all-island basis, in that the North South Ministerial Council, the All-Ireland bodies, everything is dependent upon each other. So it's a new era, and I think people want to see that. But the second message coming from the doorsteps, and this message will be no stranger to our friends who are in politics in the US as well, is that people want to see more results on the ground, that they want to know that when their child is admitted to hospital, that the care will be there. They want to know that if their child wants to go to a good school, that their neighbourhood school will be a good school. And they want to know that their identity, their community thoughts will be respected. And what we were being told at the doors was, yes, you know, the government has made good progress. There's been a lot of measures taken which have managed to move people out of poverty, provide the gateway to education for many people and so on. But they wanted more, and certainly that has been what I have been promising to people, is to say, look, we realise we did well on some issues, but we didn't do good enough. And I think that, and you see in that, you see that all the main parties lost a little bit of ground. All the big five parties all lost a little bit of ground. And we had the People for Profit winning two seats, which is a small group on the left. And we had the Green Party winning two seats, which again is a party of the left, but a party that stands, I suppose, for values which are not only, I suppose, economic or market values. So I think we need to take those messages very serious. And just the other thing that harks back to 1916, which I think is very important, is that when we think of 1916, in some ways it's viewed perhaps through one lens as a military event, but for many others, I think, in this society, it was a revolution of poets. It was a rising of poets. It was about the revival of interest in Irish culture. I mean, the start of the GAA, the Gaelic League, and Conor na Gaeilge. So I think the message was that there are other values which are important to people as well. Those values of you know, looking after your neighbour, those values of respecting the environment, respecting this country, respecting people. I think those were some of the messages coming across as well. So, of course, you know, economics, it's always about jobs and always about economics, but also I think a message was coming from ordinary people is that they want us to reflect a fair society, a place where everyone has an opportunity. So we've just gone back one day this week. Adrian, the DUP are back with the same number of seats. Sinn Féin is back with one less. So there's not a lot of change, but I think that in the time ahead, the two big parties, Sinn Féin and the DUP, understand they need to deliver more. And, you know, I'm certainly up for that. I think that's where the rubber hits the road as political representatives. We need to change people's lives for the better. So that's my reading of it. And other people maybe have other reasons, but that's my reading, and that's the lesson that I've taken from the vote.
You know, as Lord Mayor of Belfast, I think it has been recognised across the community and the communities in Northern Ireland that you did reach out, to diverse communities and utilise your time as Mayor of Belfast, as Lord Mayor of Belfast there, to bring inclusion into an area that was traditionally very political in the role of the Lord Mayor of Belfast, that you spent your time, making sure, and I'm sure sometimes to the chagrin of your own party, that the time had come to utilize that very short reign as Lord Mayor of Belfast to make sure that everybody would have the benefit of and the access to Belfast, to City Hall.
Well, Adrian, I think I was only doing my job. When you're the mayor of a great city, I think the job is to represent everyone. And while that had special challenges here, I think that what I tried to do, and I'm not the only one who tried to do it, was to make sure that everyone could feel that they owned a little bit of the city, that they had a stake in the city. And I think that was rewarded in the election. My percentage of the vote that Sinn Féin got in South Belfast went up 2%. The highest ever vote Sinn Féin got in that constituency, and I came in at the top of the poll, at the top of the ticket. But if any city knows that exclusion and discrimination is the wrong way to go, it must be Belfast. So there are a number of big issues, particularly for young people, but right across our society. And one is the whole issue of gay marriage or marriage equality. And those who think about Belfast think often of orange and green. And, you know, I'm a very proud Republican, but Republicans are about green and the orange and the white of the piece in between. And Republicans, of course, the Republicans who started Republicanism in this city, Ruth Tone and others, were not Catholics. So there's a need for us to make sure that we represent everyone and that we stand up for equality. And, you know, two groups that kept coming back to me in South Belfast were the Five Strong Gay community, who really, in the rest of this island now, there is marriage equality. It's across the water as well, increasingly in Europe. And they felt left behind. And then the other group are Irish speakers, because sadly, there are still no official status for the Irish language in the north of Ireland, whereas in Wales, there's a language act and respect for language. There is in Scotland. There is, of course, in the Republic of Ireland in the south. And the message that I suppose I brought with me from my job when I was the Lord Mayor of Belfast, and I bring into politics and bring the future, is, look, we need to find a way to make sure that everyone is inside the tent, that everyone feels that they can be proud of the city. And, you know, New York is a very diverse city, but I always meet people who are proud of New York. Some of them are not perhaps doing fantastically well in terms of finance. Some of them may, you know, have all the different pressures of life and economic and financial pressures that people have. But generally, people are proud of New York. And increasingly, that's the case in Belfast. Despite our differences, people can unite around wanting to build the city. So that's, for me, that's a new type of politics. But it's the only way. I'm sure it's the politics of the future. And I was pleased this week when we came back to the Assembly that there were many new faces and fresh faces born, some of them born perhaps around the time of the IRA ceasefire in 1994, 22 years ago, didn't have the vote when we signed the Good Friday Agreement in 1998, 18 years ago. So it's, you know, the past is so important to us here, and we need to heal the past and make sure that people aren't, those who suffered in the past are part of this collective future we're trying to build. But we have to remember it is about the future, and life is for the living, Adrian. So we need to make sure that we're focused as much on what our people need today as we are in trying to resolve those difficult issues around the past.
Mike, I want to ask you, because we're talking about the island of Ireland, and we're also talking about unrest and upheaval in Southern Ireland, as you know, personified by a 70-day period where Ireland basically could not agree on a new government. What's the correlation? How did that affect Northern Ireland generally, and then specifically?
Well, we like to joke that, in fact, this is the most stable part of the island politically, because we returned the same parties, and it looks like we will have a new executive. We don't know if all five parties will win. In fact, we know that the Unionist Party won't, so there may be an opposition for the first time. But by and large, we are able to make the transition here to a new government in the north easier than they were in the south. But what's true in both parts of the island, and I think this wasn't understood by the outgoing Fine Gael Labour government in the south, and I think maybe it wasn't understood by all the politicians in the north, and, you know, I include myself in that. I think that people didn't maybe take on board how much pain is still out there, that, you know, sometimes we might listen to the news and hear there's another investment announced, either it's Belfast or Derry or Waterford, but those take a long time to come through, and there's been an awful lot of disruption and hurt and job losses and economic distress across the country. And, you know, people's feeling certainly that they didn't get a fair deal, that those who wrapped the economy, I mean, the banking elites, global banking elites, that they were made whole again, that they're back at it, but those who are paying the price, that, you know, an ordinary family living, whether they're living in Palomina or they're living in Ballina and Mayo, sitting in a home with negative equity of €100,000, £100,000. No one has a rescue plan for that family, or someone whose children are forced to emigrate. You know, this terrible curse, Adrian. You know, even thinking of the opportunities which lie abroad, so many of our young people still emigrating. I have a daughter in Paris, a son in Berlin, two young men in UCD, and I hope they'll stay in Ireland or come back to Belfast. But we are not creating enough opportunities for our young people, and there should be a war on immigration. So the lesson I would take, and I think the government in the south underestimated this even more than anyone in the north, is that we need to really focus on how we're going to rebuild the lives of ordinary people and give them the opportunities and quality of life they're entitled to. And I'm not talking about people living in gilded mansions, but we really can't be bringing up another generation to leave County Clare and Donegal. And, as you know, they're not even able to go over to their families and their cousins in America because they can't get in. They're going to Canada and Australia. For me, we need to do more to give people, working families, to give people the dignity of employment, and then to give them the opportunities and to look after them. And I think people, you know, need to reflect on that. There's still an awful lot. This recession, they say this recession maybe started in 2007, 2008, and I know in America they call it the Great Recession. They don't use that term on this side of the Atlantic, Adrian, but it is a Great Recession, and we're coming out of it, but we're coming out of it very slowly. And I know that Dublin, they say, is doing well, and delighted to see the economy grow at a rate of 6% in the Republic, south of the border. But here in the north, we're, you know, at 0.5%, 1%. So there's still an awful lot of pain out there, and it needs tackled. And I suspect that's happening in America as well. I suspect that the recovery is uneven, and not everyone is enjoying the fruits of the recovery. So for me, that's the big job the time ahead. So that's my reading of it, Adrian. I don't know how accurate that is, but that's my reading of it. We need to be more aware of the hardships being endured by ordinary people.
A great focus in the centenary commemoration celebrations, you know, throughout Ireland, emphasizes something that perhaps many did not know. Before the started, and that was the real, very real connection between the Rising and New Yorkers, the support. Yes, from America, but particularly in New York. And it is, you know, it is now 100 years later, and that connection, you know, is very much alive and well.
You've been placed on hold. Please wait.
Okay. All right. Don't know what that's about there, but are you still with us, Martin, or do we lose? We lost Martin. Okay, we'll have to get Martin back on the line. But in the meantime, friends, I want
you've been placed on hold.
Hold on. We've been placed on hold from this side. Anyway, friends, our guest there, Martin O'Mwilor, who we have we've had the opportunity to connect with many, many times. And while we're trying to get Martin O'Mwilor back on the line, I do want to tell you about the New York, New Belfast connection and the conference which will be taking place here in June on Friday, June 3rd. Well, actually, it begins on Wednesday evening, the 1st of June, continuing on into Thursday and on to Friday. It's a conference which is being organized and has been organized by our guest, Martin O'Mwilor, which has to do with the topic that we have been talking about here, and that is the economy of Ireland. Are you back with us, Martin?
I am indeed, Adrian. Apologies. Good to be back to the Falls Road.
Okay.
And you were talking about American-Ireland connections, and we lost the connection, but of course, those connections endure, thank God.
In the meantime there, I was telling our listeners about your New York, New Belfast conference, which, again, you know, this is something which you have managed to resurrect. You have put a lot into this of your own time in reaching out, bringing, you know, Belfast to New York and to indeed to this annual conference. Tell us something about that.
Well, you were mentioning the great response from Irish American, especially New York, in the wake of the Rising, and of course the pivotal part that Irish American played in the preparation for the Rising. But more than that, it seems to me that even today in 2016, Ireland without Irish America would be very, very poor place. And I think of our arts, our great artists, and how many of them have received scholarships and tenure at American universities. I think of our sports and our athletes and how they've been able to go to the state, our entrepreneurs, really at every early look at, and of course, the huge, huge contribution of American investment to the economic success, I suppose, in that part of the economy continues to be successful, north and south, because of American companies investing in Ireland. So that, for me, has been one of the most powerful allies we have had over the last 100 years. But what we've tried to do with New York, New Belfast, is to take the concept of transatlantic links, try to formalize it a little bit, try and bring together leaders from Belfast and from Irish America. We go to Fordham because Fordham is very dear to us. Fordham University in 1928, Joseph Campbell, Belfast man, a former hunger striker, someone who was involved in 1916, set up the first Irish Studies Department there in 1928, which was the year, of course, the Irish Echo was established as well. So we go to Fordham as a guest of President Father Joseph McShane, and we bring together people and we say, form partnerships, learn more about each other. How can you develop relationships of mutual benefit, whether they're in culture, community, business, commerce, whatever? And this is the seventh time we'll be doing that. And we'll have a focus this year on culture because we're teaming up with COOLA NYC, which
yes,
is this marvelous 2016 commemorative activities by spearheaded by Susan McJones all year. And for us, we're going to have a Belfast Shebeen on the 2nd of June on the evening at Fordham, and then the next day we'll have a series of talks and debates and discussions around key areas for that transatlantic partnership. So, and one of the things I just mentioned, one, Aidan, is we'll be looking at a project called the Friendship 4, because from these little transatlantic bridges we've been building, last year four US ice hockey college teams came to Belfast and played the first games ever for points outside North America. And this year that's happening again. And four colleges, including Quinnipiac, including St. Lawrence of New York, including UMass Amherst, are coming to Belfast over Thanksgiving to play ice hockey games, which we broadcast live in the States and in Canada. And that, for me, is a really transformational relationship. It's wonderful to hear the words Belfast and ice hockey together. We're the only professional ice hockey team in Ireland is in Belfast, instead of some of those negative words you sometimes hear associated with Belfast. So that's the idea of the New York-New Belfast. We always get this wonderful Academy of Fox here in New York, much more than we deserve. And we would bring over quite a strong delegation, again, of business people, cultural leaders, and so on, from Belfast. And they're there to try and build relationships and celebrate that transatlantic bond that we have and we're very, very proud of. And no doubt many of our friends will be coming in for that again this year.
Yes. We should point out, though, that whereas the conference is New York, New Belfast, it is held here in New York. It's held at Fordham University, as you pointed out. But it is more of a U.S. Belfast conference, in that you have some of the leading corporate and cultural executives coming from across the United States to come to New York. So overall, it is America's connection with Belfast, with Northern Ireland, and that's what it amounts to. And the great progress has been made there as well.
Well, absolutely. And you know, I'm very proud of the small contribution I made to the building of Belfast when I was the mayor of Belfast. But the thing I'm most proud of is I signed a sister city agreement with Boston. And that has just taken on a life of its own. But New York, for me, is just a fabulous city. And we're very pleased that we can use our conference in New York. We're calling it this year New York New Belfast Connect, to bring people from right across. And I got a little email this morning, a lady called Amy Pritchard. She runs a company called Mod Squad. She's based in San Francisco. And she's going to come in for the highlight of the conference, is the luncheon we have on Friday, 3rd of June, which is Ireland, US, top 50 companies. And Amy Pritchard is a very proud Irish-American, but we should all be very proud of her, because she's one of the first Americans to put jobs into Derry in recent years. Her and the other company is a taxes company called Open Source Virtual, and they've put hundreds of jobs into the great city of Derry as well. So, you know, a lot of this stuff is unheralded. And part of our effort is to try and recognize and acknowledge those who are transforming our society and transforming transatlantic relationships in that way. And we will be inviting people, you know, people do come in from all over the country for that luncheon. And I'm sort of hopeful that great Italian-American Tom DiNapoli, the controller in New York State, who just made another $7 million investment in Belfast and an equity startup company in Belfast, a fund in Belfast, and hope he'll be able to come in, because for me, the greatest way to lift up and build up our communities is by creating employment, and there are a number of real heroes in America who do that. So you're right, it's wider than just New York and Belfast, but I think it focuses all the time on those things that are very important to people on both sides of the Atlantic.
Yeah, it boils down to, again, you know, the universal problem of jobs and more jobs. The difference, I think, the great difference between the normal pitch to Irish America and the great work that has been done in inducing Americans to invest in Ireland and in general, and specifically in Northern Ireland, this is not just a lecture series. This is a real a debate, it's a conference, and it is an opportunity over 2 days. It's a packed schedule, but it is an opportunity for those, not only for those who you bring to this conference, but for many of the corporates in America, you know, to basically cross-axle a Western of Ireland word, but to find out what it is that they're getting into. And sometimes those conferences can be quite contentious. So it's not just a plomos, it's not just a backslapping exercise. This is real, solid business over that two-day period. It's an education.
Yeah, and, you know, and also it's interesting, the IDA, and I suppose the IDA are the world champions at bringing in investment to the Industrial Development Authority of the Republic of Ireland and Enterprise Ireland. It's very interesting to me that in recent months they have moved away from talking about we can build you an advanced factory or this is your rate of taxation, but now they're talking about the importance of culture, the ability of people of Ireland to innovate, the strong self-awareness in Ireland, the depth of cultural understanding, the importance of place. And when IDA did a presentation in Austin recently during the South by Southwest conference, they didn't talk about taxation or the education system university. They brought Noctis, that great theatre group, out from Galway and had them do a parade in the centre of Austin. So for me also, when these people come in who have invested and may invest, we want to show them that this is a place where they will be welcome. This is a place where people have strong sense, strong character, strong sense of place, a diverse city, and also then they meet their peers who have invested here. So, you know, people, there are many, many parts of making a decision, like the ice hockey authorities in the States made a decision that they would take four college teams to Belfast, and you can be sure that that wasn't a decision made on finance alone. It wasn't a decision made on convenience alone. There were a lot of issues, and moving people, just getting them across the line. Sometimes it's important they can go into a room and they can meet other people who are in Belfast, who are proud of Belfast, and can look at the options. So, you know, we do like to form relationships and friendships and tell each other what we're doing. But if we can get people over the line and get them to come here, and you and Anya have been here, of course, we're quite delighted to welcome you. I think that's what makes a difference. So that's part of the pitch, I suppose it is. Come see for yourself. And I think Belfast is a little bit farther ahead, but then Belfast has more ground to catch up. You know, more ground to catch up. So that's what we're trying to do.
It's also important, again, obviously, investment in Northern Ireland is extremely important, but to separate investment from, you know, the cultural commonality of an Irish America, is something which has been, you know, turned around and becomes part of an investment, part of a cultural exchange, which has existed but has not been, has been kind of taken for granted when you look at in the areas of music and art and areas of our international culture. This is of great significance, and you are leaning more towards pointing out and exhibiting the culture of Northern Ireland to people who perhaps didn't associate Northern Ireland with the tremendous cultural advances.
Yes, and in my message to, you know, whether it's ANJ in New Brunswick, whether it's Pfizer, whether it's IBM, whether it's GE, the message is you're already in Ireland. You know, this is just up the road, you know. It's the same country. It's going to be the same taxation rate. The people are well-educated. They're talented. So, you know, there's little risk. And, in fact, some of these companies are expanding so rapidly. Ten of the world's top 10 internet companies are in the Republic of Ireland or south of the border. And they are crying out for talent. So my message to those companies is, well, why don't you have another office in Belfast or Derry? There's lots of young people. They're talented. They can do the same job. And, you know, and if you're an executive, they're in whether they're in Limerick or Galway or Donegal or Dublin. You know, it's just a drive up the road. So I'm certainly convinced we need to sell our part of the island as just a continuum. It's just more of what you have enjoyed and more of what you benefited from. And it's a long-term relationship. We don't want companies that are coming because they want to have a race to the bottom. We don't want companies that are coming because they think they can pay lower wages here. We want a long-term relationship, and we want to deliver the skilled people for them and make people be part of the society. And I'll just say this last thing. There is a lady in Chicago called Dorothea Patini, and she's married an Italian, but she's an Irish-American. And she took a decision to put Chicago Mercantile Exchange in Belfast rather than Dublin, and she did that for cultural reasons. She did that because she wanted to make a contribution to the peace process. And Chicago Mercantile Exchange, its European headquarters, is now there.
Dublin operation.
So we need to find more Dorothy Epicinis out there to take that sort of decision.
Now, the third annual Belfast International Homecoming Conference, that again was born out of the New York New Belfast Conference here, but it also is something. Give us in a nutshell how that is developing and how it got started in the first place.
Well, it started because we needed to invite all these people who were so generous with their time and their welcome to us in America. We needed to say to them, come back to Belfast and see for yourself. And by the way, it is a homecoming. If you have Irish-American heritage, then when you come back to this island, you're coming home. If you are, there's 6.5 million people on the island of Ireland, there's 70 million in our global family. So we're inviting all those people home. And it's not only Irish-American. We're delighted last year, a 40 strong delegation from the State Assembly and Senate of New York came to Belfast as part of the homecoming. But this year, from 12th to 14th of October, we're inviting many of our US friends and delighted to have them come. But we're also bringing over a large delegation to Glasgow. I doubt if there's a more Irish city in the world than Glasgow. But the Chamber of Commerce has come over. The mayor of Donegal, Glasgow, who has Donegal background, is called Sadie Doherty. Now, that's a great Donegal name. And she's going to lead that delegation. So really, it's trying to bring people back to the city. It's almost like a gathering, it's a celebration of Belfast, but it's a celebration of the diaspora as well, and making sure that they be welcome back home, and trying to build those partnerships and those alliances for the future. And we're there's a focus on business, but it's much more than that as well. It really is where we say thanks to the diaspora, and we say that, you know, you will always be welcome here. Your contribution to the countries you have moved to is no doubt enormous, but you're always welcome back here. And Belfast is leading the way in that. If you wish, where, you know, there are many people in the country who are welcome in the diaspora. We're leading the way by having this homecoming and then going out, led by the council, led by our different business partners, and inviting people back for those 3 days. When we have put on a showcase, we'll show the very bright side of Belfast and people and the opportunities there are here, either to study here, to visit here, to do business here, or just to form long-term relationships with arts and culture with the many great institutions we have in the city.
Let's move to where to the website to where people can actually find out more about the June 2nd and 3rd conference right here in New York, and again the third annual Belfast International Homecoming, which, by the way, is scheduled for from the 12th to the 14th of October.
Yeah.
What's the best way to get information?
Well, the Belfast Homecoming is at belfasthomecoming.com, and the emerging program is there, and details of those who have visited in the past and so on. So always keen to get people looking at that and trying to make their plans for October. The New Belfast, New York, New Belfast Connect conference, the agenda is on Iceland-events. Iceland spelled the Irish way, AISLING-events.com. And they're on the homepage, the details of New York, New Belfast. And, you know, your listeners will recognize many of the people we're hoping to have.
Absolutely.
Speaker Melissa Mark Pivarito, Council Member Daniel Drum, our great friend from the Assembly, Representative Michael Patrick. We have a full section of women leaders in New York, including Christine Quinn, who's now in charge of Win the Homeless
Family Charity and Eleanor Tatum, the publisher of the Amsterdam News. So lots of our friends who've been to Belfast there, but that's when they get information, and you know, we're looking forward to welcoming all our friends and reviewing those really firm friendships that we have established over recent years.
By the way, west of the Shannon, we would call that Ashling, but you're well entitled, you know, to have your own dialect in the north. But we would call it Ashling. So there you are.
Well, Ashling, that'll be awesome. As long as people come along, they can be assured of a warm welcome, and I think they'll find it a benefit. And for those that don't really know about the new Belfast, I think they will find it an eye-opener, and we hope it will lead to friendships and relationships which bring people to the city and to Belfast.
Martin O'Mealor, MLA Northern Ireland Assembly, and again, congratulations on topping the poll there for Belfast South. We will obviously, and I'm sure many of our listeners are loyal readers of the Irish Echo newspaper, and much of the information which we have discussed today is indeed available through the Irish Echo. Martin, thank you again for joining us, and we look forward to two very significant conferences. One, again, in New York, and that is the New York New Belfast Conference in June, here, scheduled for the 2nd and the 3rd, and the 3rd annual Belfast International Homecoming from the 12th to the 14th of October. We look forward to seeing you here in New York, and I'm sure that you will have a tremendous, as you always do, a great gathering of those who have a particular interest and love for Belfast.
Let me just thank you and Anya and the Irish Radio Network for all you do to really be the cement between all the great people in Irish America. And, it remains the case. In 1916, Irish America was a real stalwart. It was a shoulder for Ireland to lean on. But it's the case in 2016 as well. And the way that Irish America is recognising, marking, commemorating, celebrating 1916, I think it gives me great confidence for the future that Irish America will remain a great ally of all the people of this island in the time ahead. So thank you for all that you do.
Okay, again, thank you, Martin O'Mealor. Let's hear from James.
Please enter the number you wish to call.
Stop. We have the Belfast Hornpipe by Belfast James Galway.